Live from the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The mission of the Christian Research Institute is to equip believers to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have with gentleness and respect. To join us on air with your question, dial 888-ASK-HANK, which translates to 888-275-4265. For more information, go online to equip.org. And now, here's Bible Answer Man host, Hank Hanegraaff.
And thank you very much, Randy. If you like numbers rather than words, again, it is 888-275-4265. And our address on the web, equip.org, via the mailbox, 8500 Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. We'll be going to your calls a little bit later in the broadcast. Want to mention something that caught my attention this morning, an article titled "American Churches Must Reject Literalism and Admit We Got It Wrong on Gay People." The article by Oliver Buzz Thomas. And why does Oliver Buzz Thomas think we got it all wrong? Well, it is because American churches are all too often believing that the Bible is a reliable source for faith and practice, when in reality, the Bible is full of errors. And so says Oliver Buzz Thomas, we can't trust the Bible because it is full of errors, and therefore we cannot trust the Bible when it has its comments about same-sex sexuality, same-sex marriage, gender issues. The Bible's wrong because the Bible thinks somehow or other that gender is biological, when we now know in an enlightened society that gender isn't biological at all, it's a social construct. And by the way, I should mention that Oliver Buzz Thomas is a Baptist minister. He served as an attorney for the nation's largest evangelical denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention. And he has been a ferocious critic of families like our own that have too many children, in his view, which he thinks is the height of immorality. Well, number one on his hit list of obvious biblical mistakes is that in 2 Samuel 24, God incites David to take a census, when in Chronicles 21, I think he means 1 Chronicles 21, Satan incites David to do the census taking. Now remember, Oliver Thomas is, in the title of his article, urging us to reject literalism. And all the while, he's reading the Bible in the most literalistic manner imaginable. And this is what would rightly be called, in his case, in this particular instance, being a dichotomaniac. He is making a false dichotomy. Because as both God and Satan are involved in the crucifixion, Satan's purpose was to destroy the Son of God, God's purpose to redeem humanity, we see that in the text. So too, while Satan incited David, as per Chronicles, ultimately it was God who allowed Satan to carry out the provocation, as per 2 Samuel 24. So the problem is not that the Bible is full of errors and therefore has to be wrong with respect to its admonitions on same-sex sexuality, but it is that Oliver Thomas, a Baptist pastor, is not particularly sophisticated in the art and science of biblical interpretation. Now, why do I bring this up on this broadcast in this context? It is because his lack of sophistication as a world-renowned Baptist pastor ought not to be yours. You ought to know how to read the Bible in the sense in which it is intended. And God forbid that you too become a dichotomaniac, that you make false dichotomies. If you do, you're going to run into all kinds of problems. And if you don't know how to read the Bible literally, meaning as literature as opposed to in a wooden, literalistic, fundamentalistic, fervor-seeking fashion like Oliver Thomas, you're going to mistake its meaning. And you're going to think like the rest of the culture is beginning to think because of these heavyweight voices that the Bible is not reliable, it can't be trusted. It can be trusted. Oliver Thomas is simply wrong, not on just this matter, but on many others as well. And certainly we should not follow in his train. Let's go back to the phone lines, or let's go to the phone lines, talk to Janet in Washington, listening on KARI. Hi, Janet.
Hi. Thank you, Hank, for taking my call. I love your program, and I've been praying for your help.
Oh, bless you.
And I have a two-part question. When you die and go to heaven, are your sorrows, is that when God wipes away every tear, or is it like after the rapture?
Well, first of all, let's get straight what's going on. So if you were to die, let's say tomorrow, God forbid, if you were to die tomorrow, you'd be absent the body, present with the Lord. When Jesus appears a second time, there's life after life after life, meaning that at that time, the non-physical aspect of your humanity would be united with the physical aspect of your humanity, the body that died, and you'll be resurrected immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. So when you die, you are now absent the body, present with the Lord, and you are in a condition of bliss because you're with that great cloud of witnesses. And in essence, you are with the Lord. You're in the presence of the Lord and those who love him. So this is a state of bliss, but it is only a foretaste of what will come when we enter the eternal state, and then we learn and grow and develop without error. We experience the presence of the Lord, and we forever explore the glories of his created handiwork.
That's wonderful. And that was my question. I knew it was two-part, but it seemed to me that as soon as we go to heaven, if I would die tomorrow, let's say, there's no more sorrow or sadness. And that came up at our Bible study, and I just wanted to make sure. And I've listened to you all the time. And is that when God wipes away every tear?
Yeah, I think you can say that. I think you can absolutely say that, because that's a time of bliss. That's a time that's described by Jesus in Luke 16 as Abraham's bosom or paradise. So it's a time of peace and joy. It's not a time of sadness personified by tears in the eyes, but it is a time of joy. Obviously, you can have tears in the eyes, tears of joy, but the metaphor is God is going to take away our sadness. Well, yes, when we're in the presence of the Lord, we're not going to be sad. We're going to be absolutely fulfilled. But again, it's a foretaste. So the metaphor extended properly reaches its final height of conclusion when Jesus himself ushers us into the eternal state. So there's a temporary heaven and there's an eternal heaven. The temporary heaven is the heaven in which we're in a disembodied state. The eternal heaven is the one in which we are once again body-soul unities.
Mm-hmm. But just even in our bodiless, we'll be happy with the Lord.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because we're not only going to be with the Lord, we're also going to be with those who are in his presence that love him. So we're going to be with that great cloud of witnesses. So yes, we will be delighted in the presence of the Lord, what's called paradise or Abraham's bosom. It is a way of speaking about intimacy with the Lord. And so we will be overjoyed. Yes.
I wished everyone would believe that, because it's just too wonderful. And the very last part of my question, I think you've already answered. In other words, for those of us that have families on earth, when we go to heaven, we wouldn't be sorrowful if we saw them grieving.
Well, we would see things from God's perspective. And that's the ultimate joy. When we see things from God's perspective, we will see that God does all things perfectly. It's sort of like being a fly on the wall in a trial. When you know what actually happened and you see that the judge is comporting his judgments in complete concert with what actually happened as you know it to be, you'd be happy about that, regardless of how sad the trial might be in terms of its content. I am coming up to station break. We'll be back on the other side of the break with more answers to your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. We'll be right back in a moment.
Few things are more essential to our existence than prayer, through which we experience communion with our Creator. Jesus taught his disciples how to pray, and it revolutionized their lives. Hank Hanegraaff wrote The Prayer of Jesus so that you can learn to pray as Jesus prayed and revolutionize your prayer life and experience even deeper union with Christ. To receive a copy of The Prayer of Jesus, Secrets to Real Intimacy with God for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, simply visit equip.org and make a gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. That's equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
What are the secrets to real intimacy with God? In The Prayer of Jesus, Hank Hanegraaff will help you understand the mystery of prayer by delving into the prayer of the one who is the cornerstone of our faith, Jesus Christ. To learn Jesus' sevenfold secret of prayer as found in his own words, Jesus taught his disciples how to pray, and it revolutionized their lives. You too can revolutionize your prayer life by learning to pray as Jesus prayed to experience even deeper union with God. The Prayer of Jesus is the secret to attaining a level of intimacy with the lover of your soul you may never before have imagined. To receive your copy of The Prayer of Jesus, Secrets to Real Intimacy with God, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Marxism, rebranded as socialism today, is making a comeback, and in the politics of the progressive left, the makeover is complete. But Marxist theory suffers the same malady as every materialist theory. It contradicts the existence of the theorist. Other topics include, what's the problem with conversion therapy? Does Galatians 5 forbid the use of medicine? The films of Alfred Hitchcock in the age of Instagram, honoring dishonorable parents. Athanasius, a C.S. Lewis of the early church, the historicity of Moses, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
Once again, here is Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Let's go back to the phone lines. Talk to Clifford, listening in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, K-A-R-I. Hi, Clifford.
Yes, sir. In Matthew chapter 2 says that Joseph, Mary, and Jesus went immediately to Egypt after the birth of Christ for 2 years. That was the warning that Joseph had by way of dream. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Right, and then also in Luke, which is obviously a different account, says that the Holy Family, or Jesus and his parents, went to Jerusalem, and then, of course, went through the days of purification, which was 33 days, and then after that, they went to Nazareth.
That's right.
So I'm trying to reconcile those two different accounts.
Well, there's no problem whatsoever, because the gospel writers do not give us the exact same story in the exact same way. If they would do so, most of us would immediately have a word on our lips, and that word would be collusion. It's sort of a famous word now. We're using that word over and over again in the political realm, but we'd be thinking about this in the historical realm. And so what a consensus of credible scholars considers is a core set of reliable facts that are presented by the gospel writers. And they're reliable and authentic because they're not telling the same story in exactly the same way. They're giving complementary bits of the story. So in Matthew, I think it's Matthew chapter 2, you have Matthew recounting the flight into Egypt, where he says Joseph got up and took the child and his mother while it was still night and left for Egypt. And Matthew does this for a particular reason. So before I get to Luke, maybe I ought to mention that what's going on there has to do with the prophecy being fulfilled. Out of Egypt I called my son, which refers first to Israel being brought out of captivity, but Jesus ultimately fulfills this calling as the true Son of God by coming out of Egypt. Now, moving over to Luke, Luke says that when they had performed everything according to the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own city of Nazareth. Both Matthew and Luke, therefore, say that they ended up living in Nazareth. You see that in Luke 2, and I think it's Matthew 2 as well. And Luke simply leaves out the sojourn into Egypt. That's why we have synoptic gospels that flesh out the whole of the story, as opposed to each writer giving each one of the details.
I see. So actually, when they went to Egypt, it would have been after those 33 days of purification and their trip to the temple.
Yes, and it would have, yes.
Right, and can I do one more question?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Also, John chapter 1 speaks about the right, or actually Mark chapter 1 says immediately after the baptism of Jesus, he went into the wilderness for 40 days, and then John chapter 1 says that the very next day after his baptism, he chose John, and the very next day after that, found Philip, and then the third day went to the marriage in Cana of Galilee, and then after that, it said that he went to Capernaum and so on. So again, like, do you feel like he went into the wilderness immediately, as Mark said, for the 40 days, or was that again after the account that we have in John about, you know, the first day, second day, third day, and so on?
Yeah, honestly, off the top of my head, I cannot recall the exact details, but I did deal with it, I'm fairly sure, in my book, Has God Spoken? I'll tell you what, if you listen to the broadcast on a regular basis, what I'll do is I will take a look at that and comment on that on tomorrow's edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. But in general, I think, yes, the same premise applies. I don't know exactly how the details fall into place.
Hank, are your books available in bookstores or just through your...
No, they're available in bookstores everywhere, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir. God bless.
You got it. God bless you. Tamara, listening in Lancaster, South Carolina. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. My question is, I know what the Bible says about being resurrected and your body, your spirit, and everything being absent from your body. Does that same apply if you are cremated?
Yes. So basically, let me explain it this way, and it's in concert with the first question I answered today. When a woman gives birth, she gives birth to a body-soul unity. At death, there is an unnatural rending between the physical and the non-physical. So in a Christian worldview, the body goes back to the ground from whence it came. The non-physical aspect of your humanity is either in the presence of the Lord or absent the loving presence of the Lord. That's the biblical worldview. Now, if you're cremated, what happens is your cremated body will be resurrected when Jesus appears a second time. So Jesus said this about that. He said, "Do not be amazed at this. A time is coming when all who are in the graves will come out. Some will rise to live, and some will rise to be eternally condemned." So we're all going to be resurrected. There's a continuity between the body we now have and the body that will be, but all will be resurrected.
Okay.
Does that answer your question sufficiently?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
So regardless, once you are resurrected and you are there with the Lord, whether your body is cremated or not, it will be as God created you in the beginning.
Yes, except that, we were created mortal, we'll be resurrected immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. So there's a distinction between our physical bodies as they now are, mortal, and the way that they will be, immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. So you will be the perfect you, and I'll be the perfect me. And I oftentimes use the example of a caterpillar to drive home that point. So think about a caterpillar. It has a particular kind of a digestive system. It can only crawl, but then it sows the seeds of its own demise, a chrysalis, and in that chrysalis, the constituent parts of the caterpillar dissolve into a mysterious molecular mixture, and out of that comes a butterfly. Now, the caterpillar and the butterfly are the same physically, but they're different organizationally. And that's a faint glimpse of how it will be. We're now like the caterpillar, will then be like the butterfly. We now have eyes that can only discern between white and black and white, and then we'll have eyes and a vision, color acuity that exceeds even anything that we can imagine. So, you know, the caterpillar couldn't imagine having color vision and the kind of acuity that a butterfly has, but that's what the butterfly has. So there's a difference between mortal, immortal, perishable, and imperishable, corruptible, and incorruptible.
Okay. That answered my question totally.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. And I wanted to mention that we have been focusing all this month on the salient issue of prayer. I often say that prayer is firing the winning shot. And in last week's series of broadcasts, I talked about how the prayer of Jesus is divinely divided into two parts. The first focused on God's glory. So we pray, "Hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done." But the second is focused on our needs. And this is precisely how it ought to be. Jesus taught us to first reverence the realm of heaven and only then to turn our petitions towards earthly things. So the phrase, "on earth as it is in heaven," is a glorious reminder that the Shekinah glory that once filled Solomon's temple will of a verity, will of a certainty fill the new heavens and the new earth. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. The Garden of Eden was, in our minds, it is the quintessential sacred space because that was where God walked with the parents of humanity in the cool of the day. This, however, is but a portrait, of what will be when the veil between where God is and where we are is permanently removed. Moses trembled in fear when he encountered the presence of God within the burning bush. And yet, when God's space and ours merge, all such terror will be no more. Our lips will be cleansed. Our hearts will be purified. We'll touch the sacred mountain, the heavenly Jerusalem, without as much as a tinge of fear. We'll come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. We will have come to God on earth as it is in heaven. Out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more answers to your questions. My appreciation to all of you who stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. You're touching most certainly the lives of people all around the globe. So long for now.
Thank you for joining us for the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you'd like more information about the Christian Research Institute or to order resources, just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or visit equip.org, where you can listen live or download archived broadcasts. Again, that's equip.org. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
What are the secrets to real intimacy with God? In The Prayer of Jesus, Hank Hanegraaff will help you understand the mystery of prayer by delving into the prayer of the one who is the cornerstone of our faith, Jesus Christ. To learn Jesus' sevenfold secret of prayer as found in his own words. Jesus taught his disciples how to pray, and it revolutionized their lives. You too can revolutionize your prayer life by learning to pray as Jesus prayed, to experience even deeper union with God. The Prayer of Jesus is the secret to attaining a level of intimacy with the lover of your soul you may never before have imagined. To receive your copy of The Prayer of Jesus, Secrets to Real Intimacy with God, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.